Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this rainy Monday morning, this rainy holiday. What do I love about holiday Mondays? I remember. It takes me like 25 minutes to get into work.
Instead of what?
Instead of an hour. It's great. It's really nice. It's very, very nice. So,
but the other side is a lot of people aren't going to work.
That's right. But that's okay. Look, I'm with you all. How could it get better than that? Good morning. Welcome. And hope you are having a lovely day, whether you are working or not. It is a holiday, so a federal holiday. So if you are home, welcome. If you are not, welcome. Let me introduce our panel to you. We have a great group this morning, and we have a lot to talk about, so we will get to that in mere moments. So let me introduce Mike Spain is with us. He is the associate editor of the Times Union newspaper, usually with us on Tuesdays. Had a prior commitment for this Tuesday, so he swapped with Teresa. So that was good.
That was very nice of her to swap with me, and happy to be here, Joe.
Good to have you. I'm glad when you guys work all that out yourselves. That's very nice. Makes it much easier for the host. Libby Post is with us. She is always here on Monday, and we are lucky to have her, political consultant to the stars and us, and we welcome you.
Not Harvey Weinstein. No. No.
We'll get to that story
in a minute. We welcome a newbie to the program. We are thrilled to have this gentleman with us. He is chairman of the Capital District Latinos. He has an amazing biography, which I'll allow him to summarize in a moment. But Dan Arizari is here. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here and an honor to be here.
Well, thank you very much. We're glad we've been working on getting you here for a little bit, and it's nice to have you here finally. So let me, for folks who don't know, tell us a little bit about Capital District Latinos and a little bit about your background, and then I'll introduce Alan.
Absolutely. So Capital District Latinos was formed about 5 years ago, and it came out of really a terrible situation with Catholic Charities, who had a group called Hispanic Outreach Services. And back around 2010, when I was the chairman of Hispanic Outreach Services, they folded. They kind of like at the end of a board meeting said, you're out of business. And so, an institution that had been around serving the Hispanic community for 20 years in the Capital District was gone in the blink of an eye. So I and some other board members decided that we would not stand still for that, and we created Capital District Latinos to try to fill the gap. And so today I'm happy to say that we are flourishing, and we have just a few doors down from this studio. We've opened a chemical dependency treatment program that is currently serving over 600 people dealing with addiction. And we're also kind of moving on the Hispanic outreach services part of it, which was, designed to provide advocacy, really, for the people of the Capital District.
Well, welcome. It's a great pleasure to have you and to have your expertise with us. We also, of course, WAMC's Alan Chartock is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joseph. I'm just...
you sound a little froggy this morning. What's going on there?
I'm just okay.
All right. Well, let's tell... we're going to talk a few minutes just about the station news, and that is that we have 1 week. The fund drive begins in 1 week, and that means that we have 1 week to fill up that lockbox. And we have 1 week to do it, and we have a challenge on the table. We have great stuff to talk about. But I'll turn it over to Alan on the importance of filling up that lockbox and getting to the halfway point before we begin the drive on Monday morning, October 16th.
I guess we all know what this is about. This is about our radio station. It's about the most incredible station, public station in the United States, and everybody has helped to build it. And so it isn't we, they, you, us. It's all together, and we know that. Now, between now and next Monday morning at 6 o'clock, we have a great deal of money to raise. We have a $5,000 challenge on the table in order to do this. And that is extraordinary, Joe, because stop to think, everybody, $5,000 for somebody to give $5,000, that's a lot of money. It means that they're really committed to the station and to what we're all doing here. And as people clamor to listen to this show, and I must say, everywhere I go, people are talking about this panel. I have to say, we could do it today. Now, the big thing, I'll shut up after this one last thing. We all know that it is a very tough thing to raise a couple of $100,000, and it sounds right, wrong. But we've already raised over $300,000, number one. We know that there's something called the whoosh factor. As you get closer, you get faster. Joe, you and I have talked about it many times. Yes. And we're getting closer now. During the fund drive, we never make less than $100,000 a day. So you would think $200,000 in a week is doable if people really don't want to see an ongoing fund drive and they really want to get it over. We've done it in basically a day in the last two times. We can do that if everybody decides, yeah, you know, I think he's right about this. We'll get it done now.
You know, you and David were on this morning, and there was a really nice run there of almost $5,000 just this morning after you and David spoke. So I don't see any reason. So we're at just over $310,000 upon my walking into the studio this morning. I don't see any reason we can't be at the 325 mark by 10:30 this morning.
Yes, that's one way of looking at it. The other way is we could be done by 10:30.
Well, that's right. I'm just trying to, you know, handle expectations.
I'm going to tell you something. If we could do that like in the next 25 minutes or an hour and a half.
Yeah, give us an hour.
Give an hour. Even Mike Spain would have to put it on the front page of the Auburn Times.
And I'm sure he would. Just a reminder, we still have tickets to the Capitol Steps, $150 for a pair to see the Capitol Steps on November 3rd. Also, don't forget, we have, and those are going, they're almost gone. We only have like less than 40 pairs of those. So that's very soon. And also, we have the incredible, on the 11th, the amazing talk with Alan Chartok and the legendary Harry Belafonte, also at the Egg, and a pledge of $150 will get you a pair of tickets for that. So that is our task for this morning. Do what you can to fill up that lockbox, whatever you can do, $5, $50, $100, $5,000, whatever you can do, please, please do it. And the fund drive begins on October 16th, and if we fill it up, we don't have to have a fund drive, and you can continue.
Hey, Joe, one last thing, and that is we know that Harry is great, the best, that he's doing this with us, and the Capitol Steps where we all gather each time. But in the end, it's the $5, the $10, or the $1,000 that people put in because they love the station.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get started. We have the news of the weekend and of today, and we will start hammering away at that and trying to figure out what the hell's going on right after this.
Support comes from Henyon Bakery, Amherst, Massachusetts. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. The Carey Institute for Global Good, home of the Logan Nonfiction Program, committed to an informed, educated, and engaged citizenry. CAREYInstitute.org. The Department of Theater Arts, SUNY New Paltz. To Kill a Mockingbird, the coming of the age tale where poverty and racism exist side by side. October 12th through the 22nd, newpaltz.edu/theater. Atelier Rene Fine Framing Red Hook, custom picture framing in a studio setting, personalized service, archival framing, materials and methods. AtelierReneFineFraming.com. And New York State AFL-CIO, with 2.5 million members speaking with one voice, helping working families achieve a better life, NYSAFLCIO.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. I'm going to start off with the story regarding what the Trump administration has put out regarding immigration and the Dreamers deal. Just know that in my heart of hearts, I would much rather talk about. Not that I'd rather talk about it. I would love to start off talking about Bob Corker because I love that story yes. so much. But we will we'll hold that one because there is a lot of gossip and just name calling in there. But
there's a bit of a connection between the two.
Yes, of course there so very much is.
Can we call it Daddy Kate Daycare?
Yeah. We certainly could do that. All right. So the Trump administration released a list of hardline immigration principles late Sunday that threatens to derail a deal in Congress to allow hundreds of thousands of younger undocumented immigrants to remain in the country illegally. So in other words, you can have your DACA, but .. The administration's wish list includes the funding of a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, a crackdown on the influx of Central American minors, and curbs on federal grants to sanctuary cities. That, according to the document distributed to Congress and obtained by the Washington Post. The demands were quickly denounced by Democratic leaders in Congress who had hoped to forge a deal with President Trump to protect younger immigrants, known as Dreamers, who were brought to the United States illegally as children. Trump announced plans last month to phase out DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, an Obama-era program that had provided two-year work permits to the Dreamers that Trump called unconstitutional. Alan, I'll let you get first on this, and then we'll head over to Dan on his perspective.
Well, thanks, Joe. I'm very interested in what Dan has to say about this. But I have to say, in order to understand what's going on, you have to look at Trump and Trump's mind. There are, it's hard, but there are three things.
What mind?
How long can that take? Yeah.
Well, no, he has a mind. And in this American capitalistic system, he's done extraordinarily well. Let's not forget that. So what is it that he's looking at? Number one, he's looking at his base. If you take a look at this alternative deal with the Democrats, it's all about the base. He can't be. They're polling. They're finding. They're finding out that people don't want to be let down on their on their anti-immigrant perspective, and so they're doing this terrible, in my mind, terrible thing. That's one thing that is going on. Another is that you better believe that Trump is a very concerned about what his image is at any time. And as we've talked about, Libya, as we've all talked about many times, there's the shiny, bright object. There's always something that has to be brought up when something bad is going on. What's bad is going on right now is Senator Bob Corker, who says he's speaking for all the Republicans in the United States Senate. That's extraordinary. And he wants out, and he is going after Trump and saying he might cause World War III. Something, by the way, I think you've heard me say over the months. So I think it's all it's diversionary. It's the art of the deal. He doesn't care what the deal is. He just wants a deal. And by putting it all on the table this way, he says, okay, let's see where we can split the difference. But let me tell you, it's disgusting.
Dan, there's a lot to unpack here, but seems that it was the 70 points that they put out in this memo, and one just seems more troubling than the other.
It certainly does. And let me just start out by saying happy Hispanic Heritage Month to all the Hispanics listening to this. And
October.
And I say that with tongue in cheek at this point when we're talking about this subject, because to paraphrase Terrence Howard in Hustle and Flow, it's hard out here for a Hispanic. That's all I got to say. We are seeing unbelievable threats to our freedoms. We are seeing in Saratoga Springs, for instance, ICE out there pulling people from restaurants. We are seeing ICE agents waiting as people go to family court to grab them up. And it is truly frightening. And I think, Alan, to your point, I really think that fear is the coin of the realm at this point. Mm. We're talking about a man who is basically a tyrant who is running this country. And we've seen his like before in the Hispanic community. He's a strong man. He is the father figure, and he is basically ruling with fear as his main weapon.
What's the end game, do you think? What's his end game?
Well, I think that he wants to, he's already surveyed the landscape, and he knows that the GOP can't give him what he needs in terms of a legislative victory. And he sees that the Democrats are never going to swallow this. So what he does is he's playing the victim to his base. He says to them, look, I tried to do this and I can't because the GOP conservative base, which is like the mainstream political class, they're not helping me. And the left is attacking me. So guess what? I'm still your guy, but I'm a victim here.
I think that's brilliant, to be honest with you. I really think it's a brilliant analysis of what's happening. You're exactly right. But when Joe says, what's the end game? What I think we're talking about here is the possibility that he really might go for the whole thing. Mm. You said strong, you know.
Strong men.
We've seen we've seen these strong men before, and we know what that leads to. What do you
absolutely.
Think?
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, you start reading about, I think one of the problems with our society is that we are so involved in right now. We don't think about history in the way that we should. And Alan, you are a student of history, and you know that we've seen registration programs before. We've seen the Japanese internment camps. Sure. And, you know, some people might say, oh, you're being alarmist. No, I'm not, because 800,000 DACA registrants are now in danger of being rounded up at any moment. And can you imagine those images of those young people, those bright young people who have done nothing wrong, being locked up all over the United States?
And by the way, you mentioned Saratoga. I want you to know the same thing exists where I live, in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. People disappear.
Sure. We're hearing the stories in the Hudson Valley as well as the North Country as well. We're going to pause there. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. We'll introduce your letters as well. It's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this 9th of October. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Mike Spain, Dan Irizarry, and we welcome you as well. Your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. All right. We were talking about this Dreamers deal, and so I just want to get Mike's perspective and Libby's perspective, and then we'll go to the letters as well.
The only thing I would add is if there had been a deal, you know, with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi to have a solution to the Dreamers or an extension to it, and it fell through. I mean, he has completely gone back on that now. If there's another deal and it encourages people to step forward and to register, who's going to believe it? Who's going to register? And then their status is, I didn't register, and you can be thrown out of the country. Or I can register, and they know right where you are, and they can come and take you and throw you out of the country. It's just frightening.
Libby?
It leaves you sort of speechless, the speed at which government is disintegrating in front of our eyes because of what this man is doing. And, you know, there are 800,000 young people in this country who want to have a college education, serve in the military, sure, serve our country, be part of our country. Who are we to say no to these people? But, you know, he is saying no to transgender people in the military.
That's right.
He wants to say no to lesbian and gay and bisexual people in the military. He wants a world, a country that looks like him, white, mm-hmm, pasty, supposedly Christian, and I don't even think he's really has any kind of religious ethic other than what will get him elected. But he wants a white country, and we need to recognize that almost everything that they do harkens back to white supremacy and wanting a white country. Pence leaving that football game, I know we'll talk about this later, is a perfect example of that.
One last thing in there, Libby. I think you're right about everything you've said, except the one thing we have to remember is that this is a guy who said he was going to be good for gay people when he was running for office.
I know.
So
nothing.
So nothing, and for Hispanics, so nothing means anything.
No, and what they did last week with giving people the right to discriminate based on religious liberty. Religious liberty is the ability for you and I, Alan, to go to synagogue on Rosh Hashanah, but not necessarily make everybody else go. They see religious liberty as being as freedom to discriminate. So now everything that we were able to gain during 8 years of Obama is going out the window.
We got letters like this from Maureen, who say, another day, another disgraceful action. The president will use the lives of 650,000 young people who've done nothing but work to enjoy the lives their parents hoped they would have as immigrants to the U.S. as a bargaining chip is a stunning descent into brutality. I see Stephen Miller's twisted mind behind this as well. Mark writes, I traveled to East Germany in 1969 and saw police on every corner stopping people to ask for their papers. Even though the Vietnam War was raging, I felt proud to be an American at that moment. I remember thinking, in America, we don't do this. We don't stop people in the street and ask for their papers. Leslie says Trump's immigration policies will result in a brain drain of foreigners who fear his racist regime. I'm a legal permanent resident. I'm in fear of what retrograde policies he and his racist AG will come up with. Lee makes this point, with a childlike distractibility, President Trump is unable to express any true concern for his fellow human beings unless it is composed by someone else. Yet, we have given him the biggest of all toys to play with, the planet Earth.
Wow.
Ben writes and says, Pelosi and Schumer need to get out of Trump's bed. He's using them for his 2020 run. A racist, xenophobe, homophobe supporter and enabler of white supremacists, Nazi, KKK. How do you deal with a viper?
And so wait. I want to ask the panel or anybody on the panel whether they think that Schumer and Pelosi, if they have a chance to save the DACA people, if they have, should stay away from him no matter what. Do you know?
That's a really tough question because ultimately you want to protect these people. They're deserving of it. But, you know, the devil is in the details. Look at all those. You said 70 stipulations in the law or in that memo. I haven't read it. But all I need to see is that he wants to build a wall. So somehow he's trying to, you know, extort from, I think we should call him Chancy, Chuck and Nancy, you know, like Bennifer. So he's trying to extort from Chancy this, you know, idea of 800,000, we'll protect them, but give me all the other stuff I want to make everyone else's life miserable.
Well, maybe you're right and maybe you're wrong. Maybe what he really wants is the impression that he's dealing with them. And the deal itself, you know what I'm saying?
Because he's a master of illusion, right? He's like, you know, I'm going to make this happen over here. And at the same time, he's taking something away from you on the other hand.
But that's the same illusion of working with the Republicans as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's no different, right? I mean, he's out for his own.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And Nancy and Chuck have to have the 2018 elections in everything that they do. Every decision that they make is going to have the 2018 elections be a part of it. And so if they go with him on this, so these kids can stay, yet capitulate on the wall or capitulate on something else, they really undermine their chances in 2018. And so it's, you know, whether or not Trump is actually a political mastermind remains to be seen. But now he's put them in a position that could very well be untenable on either side.
Well, first of all, he's the president of the United States. So he has had some success, right? I mean,
you have to keep reminding us of that, Alan.
I know. But the second thing is, Libby, thank goodness you're here with us, because you're the political, you know, the person who tells people what to do. So what should we do?
Wow. No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure.
Well, what would Democrat? I mean, what would you just say to Democrat? I mean, I think this is a good question, because we have to come up with leadership at this. Mm-hmm. The Democrats have to come up with some modicum of leadership to say this is what we're.
They need to stand by humanity, and so they need to stand up and say, we want these people to be able to stay. We want to strengthen DACA and make sure these 800,000 kids can stay. Okay, but that doesn't mean we're going to capitulate and build this wall, or we're going to let there be armed guards on every on every street corner, and that people are going to be asking for their papers. I think that, you know, we need to stand up for real democratic ideals here, and not capitulate, because it's a win-win or lose-lose, regardless of how this goes. But they have to look towards 2018 and make sure that they're getting a message out that will get people to the polls. Look, the Hispanic vote is incredibly important in 2018, as is the Black vote and every other group that's been so vilified by this man. If we could all get together, I mean, I'm looking at 2020 and thinking the Democrats have to come up with somebody that'll be a coalition candidate that the majority of people can get behind, as well as the ideologues on the left need to take a step back and recognize what's at stake.
I think it's like the old saying, if you don't stand for something, you fall for anything. I think we have to be very careful about what type of deals we're making, because this man has proven that he just plays both sides against the middle.
He can't be trusted.
Right, and can't be trusted.
Well,
right?
Yeah. But if you're Chuck, who I know fairly well and who I have great respect for, what do you do? I mean, do you really say, I'm not going to deal with you at all, I'm going to let people get deported, if there is a chance that you can make a deal?
Yeah, that's not leadership. You're right, Alan. If he can, if the deal as articulated a couple of weeks ago were to happen, where the wall was not part of it and there was going to be some kind of compromise that was going to achieve this, that's a deal you would be foolish not to pursue. But now it's like, you know, a shell game. He's changing the terms without any, unilaterally just changing the terms and upping the ante, and you know,
he's got Steve Bannon out there.
Yes,
just
he does.
Ready to throw grenades at him.
Right.
If he were to make a deal like this, do we really think that he's going to let us risk that happening? I don't think so.
Leadership for the Democrats is standing up for democratic principles and standing up to the president.
Right.
You know, if the Republicans, if Bob Corker is willing to stand up to the president, and if some of these other Republicans would do it, the Democrats certainly have to do it.
Let me read one. Go ahead, Alan.
Well, I can't wait till we get to that point.
All right. Well, I want to read
about the Corker story.
I want to read one article.
It is so important.
Yes.
I want to read one letter, and then we'll go to a break. And when we come back, we'll do the Bob Corker story. Doug says, if we get protection for Dreamers, or maybe even in exchange for money for border protection, even the wall, do it. Remember, the Dems have no power in any branch of government now. Maybe in 2019, but not now. Let's take a break. Go ahead, Alan.
That's a fascinating letter. Yeah. It really is. In other words, is keeping the DACA people safe worth spending billions on a wall? That's the question.
We will continue our conversation and welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Also, don't forget the lockbox. We need you. We're still on our quest for that money. So please, 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 WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262, extension 0. Just press 0 when you get there, and an operator will help you out. 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Mike Spain, and Dan Irizarry join us this morning, and we are thrilled to have you with us as well. As promised, the Bob Corker story, and it's a corker. It's a good one. There were a couple of things that happened over the weekend, one of them was because not that we are, you know, children-like or childlike here, but it seemed that Trump started it, right?
He started it.
But the issue is that Trump originally tweets out that he could that Corker was begging him for his endorsement. Corker shot back that, oh, by the way, you know, it's like running an adult daycare center at the White House for these generals who have to try to just keep this guy in place so he doesn't destroy the world. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now the New York Times then sits down with him and has an in-depth interview with him.
Corker.
With Corker, and he makes several charges in the interview that his office, Trump's office, was Trump was treating his office like a reality show with reckless threats toward other countries that could set the nation, quote, on the path to World War III. In an extraordinary rebuke of a president of his own party, Corker said that he was alarmed about a president who acts like he's doing The Apprentice or something. He concerns me, Corker added. He would have to concern anyone who cares about our nation. Mr. Corker's comments capped a remarkable day of sulfurous insults between the president and a Tennessee senator, a powerful, if lame duck, lawmaker whose support will be critical to the president on tax reform and the fate of the Iran nuclear deal. It began, as I mentioned, on Sunday morning and just escalated. The senator, Mr. Trump said, had begged him for his endorsement. I said no, and he dropped out. Mr. Corker flatly disputed that account, saying Mr. Trump had urged him to run again and promised to endorse him if he did, but the exchange laid bare a deeper rift. The senator's views that Mr. Trump is a given to irresponsible outburst, a political novice who has failed to make the transition from show business. And I think one of the things that is most striking about this situation is that Corker seems to be speaking. He makes mention of this a few times.
He does.
Speaking for the Republicans, the GOP, mm-hmm. and especially the leadership, okay, this is what everybody says when they go out at night. This is what everybody says. I'm just in a position where I can say it.
Well, yeah, I think that's right, but it also speaks to the idea that the people who are in office and are running again are not really interested in telling the truth, not being a profile in courage, as we have said so many times here, but being much more interested in preserving their own senatorial incumbency. And that's disgusting.
Well, I think the old saying from the good book, the truth, you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free. I think Bob Corker is about as free and loosey-goosey as you can get him these days because he's on his way out and there's nothing like, you know, I'm probably close to retirement myself. So I find myself, I work for a state agency, so I find myself very free to say some things that I would not have said 10 years ago. And I think that's what he's feeling. He's feeling like, you know, the world, the United States citizenship should know that this guy is unhinged and he is a danger.
I asked this question earlier about the long game. So, Alan, I know there's not there doesn't seem to be a lot of thought sometimes in what the president puts into his tweets. But let's just say, as many have been reporting over the weekend, let's just say that Tillerson either is fired or resigns. Okay,
yes.
Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, says, I'm done. I've had enough of this nonsense. I'm out of here.
Inevitable.
Well, then Bob Corker is the guy who's going to lead the hearings for the nominee coming in. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem to be like very that doesn't seem to be overly strong. I think it may be a little bit reassuring for many American citizens, but wondering about the president's mindset of saying, do you get in a fight with this guy?
Well, you know, I keep thinking and thinking and thinking about this, and I'm really worried about one thing more than anything else, and I'm sure the panel agrees with me, and that is he has nothing between him and the button. Nothing. There is nobody who can say anything. There's nobody who can do anything. Now, I'm suggesting that now that he's got the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, where he does, and other places, this may be a really good time to try to put something between the president and that nuclear button of his. Because I have no doubt that he is capable of using it. And then, as I have said, from day one, a putsch occurs in American government, and he takes over.
So here's the other thing, though, and I'll just add this to the mix, and then when everybody's thought about it, which is, but in making these remarks, with Corker coming out and saying what he's saying about the president and the behavior and the unfitness for office, you all but inviting your colleagues to come in and join
That's
you
right.
and to speak out. Like, mm-hmm. come on, folks, let's get our act together and speak out against this guy once and for all. It is extremely important that we do so. So the obvious question is, will they?
No.
No, I would not be surprised. This may not be the event that causes it to happen, but it will begin to happen at one point. It seems like we're there. It seemed like we were there, where some sitting Republicans who intend to seek re-election, who need to be around and want to be part of the power structure, are going to speak out and say what Corker says is the case, and that is that they're all talking about this behind the scenes. I mean, numerous reporters and columnists and TV people have said they're all their friends on Capitol Hill, and the staffers all say that they pretty much agree completely with Republican leaders, completely agree with what Corker is saying. They just are afraid of committing political suicide. When will it be political suicide not to speak out?
Well, you think it's interesting that the whole thing that happened in Alabama with that race with between Strange
and
Moore,
right?
Isn't
that more
strange
than
most, right?
Isn't that kind of the handwriting on the wall, too? Couldn't it be perceived as that? Because now you have Corker standing up and saying what he did. And then you have the specter of Bannon running a candidate against somebody that Trump actually campaigned for and unsuccessfully. So is there maybe a perceived weakening that's happening and people are feeling emboldened more to maybe stand up? Nobody knows for sure.
And Alan, you just mentioned this about a while ago about the Bannon connection and bringing these candidates in.
Well, it is really double-edged sword, if that's the right metaphor for this, because on the one hand, the Republicans have to worry that they'll be defeated in a primary, right? And on the other hand, they have to worry that if they get people who are so far to the right that they lose the middle, that they'll lose their elections.
That's right.
And that is that's the classic bind that they're all in right now. I think basically the Democrats right now are in a better position than they have ever been because all of this stuff is happening.
All right. So when you look at what happens, or did you want to get it? I'm sorry.
No. I mean, there's not much more that you can say about this. You know, Corker is speaking for the silent majority of the Republicans.
a new way to describe the silent majority.
Yeah, he's speaking for the silent majority, and you know, but they're all afraid because you know elected officials have two rules: get elected and get reelected. And you know, they're all trying to figure out how to make this work in 2018 so that they keep their jobs. Because and the problem here is this: keeping their jobs is more important than protecting America.
Well, there's a tipping point. I don't think we're there yet, but I think we're really close. Where
67% of the country don't approve.
Right, but I'm talking about the people in power, where they're going to see it, as I said before, a liability to continue to support this president.
And also, what is Corker's game in this? I mean, is he looking to 2020?
Yeah,
gotta
I think
be,
it's
right?
going to be Corker Flake.
There's a dream ticket for you.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's
a nightmare
ticket. You might see it. I think that's what you might see. And that they are the two that have been the most vocal against the president. And they'll come out as being the rational Republicans, even though we know that they're not. But, you know, these
but
are people.
What does that
who,
do to Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell? How does that make them look?
Well, weaker than they already are.
And I think that that's probably the discussion they're having all the time these days.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you haven't heard a word, a peep from Paul Ryan, really, other than, you know, jumping up and down that women can't get birth control. Other than that, he hasn't come out against the president. He hasn't done anything. They've both been emasculated by this guy.
Alan?
Yeah.
All right, succinct. There you go.
Yeah. Right.
And on that, yep. We're going to take a break, and we will. We welcome your letters. Panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. We're going to get news while we're doing that. You can also go to our lockbox and help out. We need you. We still are looking to, advance the cause here over the next 30 minutes. And a reminder that whatever you do is important. So WAMC.org, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262.
And I have one last thing to say. Can I, Joe?
Yeah, of course.
No,
you're good.
Which is... You know, Jacob's Pillow is a wonderful place. Now, you're going to wonder where I'm going with this. But they have an outside facility. And you can bring your kids, and it doesn't cost anything. But you know what? There's a wonderful box there. So if you're there and you're bringing your kids, they say, wouldn't it be nice if you could put something in? This radio station is, on the surface, free. Anybody can listen to it. On the other hand, if you're out there right now and could do $5 or $100, right this second, it would be great, just like that box at Jacob's Pillow.
All right, you heard it. 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, political consultant Libby Post, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, and Dan Irizarry, who is chairman of the Capital District Latinos, all join us this morning, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We got letters like this from Christine, who writes, Corker and all the Republicans who were 99% behind Trump during the election. What did they think was going to happen when he was in the House, in the White House? Shame on all of them. Bob says, when the truth about a leader is awful, it is necessarily wise for people to have to work with him to dwell on it. I think it's very naive to believe that Trump can be tamed or shamed by anything Republican senators might say. This weekend, he again proved that's not the case. Mary says, in answer to the question, is a wall worth it if it saves dreamers? Our electoral president has never shown that he can be trusted on any deal or that his word can be trusted. From his former wives to contractors stiffed and working with him to victims of his fake university to voters, 45 has shown he cannot be trusted. His word is full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Neither Trump nor Pence served in the U.S. military. They have no concept of patriotism. I'm a vet and stand by taking a knee. So let us move to that story if we can. President Trump reignited the feud with the NFL on Sunday by telling Vice President Mike Pence to walk out of a game in his home state of Indiana after nearly two dozen players from the visiting San Francisco 49ers knelt during the playing of the national anthem. Mr. Pence lavishly documented his early departure in a series of tweets and an official statement issued by his office. On Twitter, he declared, I left today's Colts game because at POTUS and I will not dignify any event that disrespects our soldiers, our flag, and our national anthem. The trip schedule was he was in Las Vegas. He went from Las Vegas to Indianapolis, from Indianapolis to the city of Los Angeles. So the question now is saying, how much did the taxpayers pay for what basically turns out to be a publicity stunt of having you go to a game that you're going to walk out of to prove whatever point you're proving?
From what I've read, it's over $250,000.
Well, there you go.
Okay. So there you go. Over $250,000.
But there are those appearances where presidents and vice presidents do this, swoop in. And I mean, he was there basically to...
But he walked out. He wasn't there for the game. He wasn't there for any purpose other than...
Weren't they doing Peyton Manning Day also? They were giving him a plaque or something or a statue in the outfield or whatever you call that in football.
It's the bullpen.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. He intended to be there and then capitalized on it to make it a political protest and doing it in this passive aggressive way.
Right,
and,
but even if
that is the case, the president then immediately took credit for it and said, I told the vice president that if anybody kneels, to get out of there, and he did. So,
which goes back to the daycare story, because he's telling everyone that it's his idea, not Pence's idea.
Right, because he acts like a five-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And I guess what I want to know, Alan, what ultimately does this tell us about Mike Pence?
He's just waiting.
Wait. My thing here cut out. I'm sorry. My earphones cut out.
Oh, okay.
I'm so sorry. I'm with those who think that this is going right to the base. That's all. The American flag, it's been used many times, flag burning over the years. There's an incipient racism involved in this, because we all know that the people who are taking the knee are often doing that in order to make the point about how people of color are treated in this country. And it's just part of the program. I mean, there should be nothing that is instructive to us. I was walking down the stairs this morning, and I'm thinking, how does this help Pence? Clearly, if Trump doesn't run again, which is a possibility, Pence will, right?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the fact that he has taken no exception to anything that Trump has done really is so telling, because the guy wants to be president in the United States, and he thinks this is his only shot.
It's hard to disagree with that. The thing that gets me, though, it's letting people define what the players intend and what their reason for bending down on their knee is. They can say why they're doing it. They're doing it to protest injustice. And they're not doing it to condemn veterans. They're not doing it to condemn America. They're doing it to be in solidarity with people who have been victims of injustice. And they say that. And why do people step forward and say, why, this is an insult to me because I fought in a foreign war? No, it's not.
It has nothing to do with veterans. It has nothing to do with veterans.
And they're coming out. There was a football game over the weekend in Schenectady County in Niskayuna where some veterans showed up to protest some of the kids who were getting down on their knee or bowing or making some kind of gesture in solidarity with these NFL players. And it has nothing to do with that. And it kind of hijacks the whole thing. It's just not real.
It is the modern day equivalent of sitting at Woolworth's cafeteria. It is protest. It is protest for civil rights. Back in the 60s and the 50s, when Martin Luther King was active, didn't everybody call him anti-American? Didn't they say he was a communist?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't they say this was against, you know, the principles of democracy? Well, what's different about this? It's
and
just
wasn't
a different
he,
guy.
And wasn't he investigated by none other than J. Edgar Hoover?
Absolutely.
Who were putting,
bugs under the bed.
Yeah, under the bed.
We've seen this movie before. Unfortunately, this is an even more psychedelic version of it.
Except that, you know, I've been thinking about this FBI thing. Hoover, Nixon had Hoover, no two ways about it. And Hoover, of course, was a force unto himself. But the FBI is no longer, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I do really think that thank God there that the FBI is independent once again.
Yeah. All right. Were you going to say something?
No.
Okay.
Fine.
All right.
Let's talk about Harvey.
We got to talk about Harvey, otherwise people are going to be writing us letters
That's
and saying,
right.
"How come you're not talking about Harvey?"
I know.
Yeah, they already are.
All right, so Harvey Weinstein is out of his own company, and who threw him out? His brother, and the board. So
the board that was left because a bunch of them resigned on Friday.
A mass exodus after the damning New York Times expose on Harvey Weinstein, which. I don't know. It goes to show the issues and the problems with this entire situation, where this apparently is the worst kept secret in Hollywood that this guy was bad news and a lech. And then everybody comes in and says, there are incidents after incident. And then all of a sudden the board says, oh, my God, really? We had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, this is par for the course in Hollywood. You know, this is just one more example of women needing to get onto the couch to make it ahead, to get ahead in Hollywood. And I'm not surprised, and I don't think anybody really should be surprised. You know, I mean, here's a guy who's a liberal and who gives money to women's issues, but separates and compartmentalizes his sex life and his desire to do whatever he wants and harass women from the rest of his life. And, you know, it's not surprising. This happens all the time. Look, we had Trump bragging about,
exactly.
grabbing what he was going to grab. And And this man got elected.
The 1 year anniversary this weekend.
Right. And this man got elected
travesty.
President, and Harvey Weinstein, lost his job, and Lisa Bloom lost her job. But this is what women put up with every single day in every work situation that we're in. And
Wait a second. Did you say every single day in every single work situation that you're in?
I think that it happens a lot more. Not people don't do it to me anymore, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen to me.
No.
But
you said every single
but
day.
But it does
in every
happen
single
every
situation.
Single day in maybe not every single employment situation, but I would say probably in the overwhelming majority of work situations, women are subjected to harassment in subtle ways and not so subtle ways. It's part of our culture. We live in a rape culture. It's part of our culture. Women are seen as sexual objects, not seen as equal to men. And this is what happens.
There's a long stretch between the Weinstein thing happens every day in many companies and the less egregious forms, however, still unjust forms of discrimination against women. I would agree with the latter part that women are not treated equally broadly.
Because women are seen as sexual objects.
Not for nothing, but white men in power abusing their power to prey on women. Is that something we're shocked about?
No.
By the way,
when the President of the United States the first.
I'm not shocked.
By the way, could this be the Roger Ailes story, except with a different political party?
That's exactly what it is. It's exactly what it is. I mean, I remember...
One last thing really quickly. I was watching CNN, and apparently Trump has said he's not surprised about the Weinstein, the Weinstein story.
Yeah.
This, of course... is the chutzpah remark of the day.
That's right.
Well, the one thing about the story, and Libby, I'm going to direct this to you, but the one thing where this story is different from the Weinstein, or I'm sorry, from the Roger Ailes story, is that in both cases, you had many women who settled. However, the settlement figures in the Ailes case, millions and millions and millions of dollars, where the settlements for the women in the Weinstein cases were in some case $25,000, and that I found to be really shocking and a real. I mean, it's the same. It's basically the same thing as far as advancing the career, but for the hush money, if you will, to be as low as it was, I found that to be a notable difference in the two cases.
It could be Murdoch. If you think about it, Murdoch has very deep pockets. They decided none of it was worth it with Ailes, and that they would pay whatever they had to. This other case may be very different.
Well, here's another disturbing part of the story is that now everyone who took political contributions from Harvey Weinstein, which is mostly Democrats, they're all under the microscope now, and they're all being told, or many are being, feel like they have to give the money back.
Yeah, his friends are now going to have to, basically, and some have, already said it, they valued his friendship and enjoyed the benefits of his friendship, but now they must condemn his behavior and distance themselves from it, and it's awkward.
Does it attach to them no matter what they do? And say, we're going to give all our money that we got from them to women's causes. We're going to do all of that stuff. Does this ruin them forever, or are they perfectly comfortable saying, hey, we didn't know?
No, but Fox News is going to have so much to talk about for the next month that they will not lack for content. Right. That's for sure.
Right. Well, for the folks that Ailes supported, do they have to give the money back?
No, they did.
They didn't offer it. I think some did.
I think some people will give the money back. Some people will make it go to other things.
Or they can say, it got me elected, and I'm going to fight for the rights of women and against this kind of discrimination.
Right.
I mean, but I think you're right, Dan. It'll be fodder on Fox News, and I think it deserves to be. I mean, I think it should be compared to the Bill O'Reilly and Roger Ailes cases. You wonder, who's next? Because if the New York Times is doing it on Weinstein, who else is going to come forward and say this powerful man also did this.
Well, power is what's the key here. It's not about party. Yeah. It's about power. Mm. And powerful white men think they have the they have the license to do what they do.
I think there's some powerful white men who have been pigs who are shuddering right now.
Yes.
As they should be.
Right. So it is, you know, this is part of women's daily lives, you know, and it's, I'm glad that it got found out. I'm glad that he doesn't have his job anymore. I'm sure it'll have an impact on Hollywood and the movies that are going to be made, and maybe women will be treated with a modicum of more respect for like 6 months. But things will go back to MGM. It's been this way for decades. This is the way it works.
Was David old Selnick like this? Was he like that back then?
No, but I think
a lot of them were.
Probably were.
Mayer was.
Yeah. Goldwyn Mayer.
Yeah.
All right, let's real quick go to this story. U.S. lawmakers pledging to back Puerto Rico's recovery as the governor prepares to ask Congress for a multi-billion-dollar aid package to help rebuild from the devastation caused by Maria. The Puerto Rican government saying they will ask Congress by January for long-term assistance for the U.S. territory where the storm caused an estimated $80 billion to $100 billion in damages. He made his case to a bipartisan delegation of U.S. senators over the weekend who flew over some of the island's hardest hit areas. How do you think this? So the early word, Dan, as they work out on this, is senators saying, "Okay, we will do the money. It's what the money goes for." Seems to be the early question.
Well, you don't have enough time to discuss this in depth, but I will say this: this is going to be Puerto Rico for many different reasons is a canary in the coal mine. Mm-hmm. When you talk about climate change. When you talk about U.S. policy with regard to Latinos and what they're going to do with this mess that has been created there by the storm, is going to be very telling. And right now, I have to say that I am very fearful that this story that I read this morning, Alan, I'm not sure if you read it, where FEMA has taken unfavorable statistics about Puerto Rico and the recovery effort off the page, which they did, by the way. Sure.
They're not required to report it like they are in the 50 states. Yeah, oh, they're apparently exempt from it. So they're taking that option not
disgusting.
To report it.
Sure.
Yeah.
it's a colony. Let's face it. Everybody wants to describe it some other way, but it's a colony. So $4 billion is going to be a drop in the bucket. Right. Of course, you're talking about the Wall Street vulture funds out there that are waiting to swoop down and grab every nickel from the Puerto Rican people. This is a real disaster in every sense of the word. The only thing I'm hopeful about, and I got to give a shout out here to this station and to the way that you've handled things and the way that you've brought people here to talk about this disaster, I must applaud you. I'm really happy about how you did not hesitate, Alan, to put a link to charities that are doing the work of recovery in Puerto Rico. And I think that it's time for the Hispanic community also, if I might, and although we're far from monolithic, I think it's time for us to appreciate what this station does just in general around progressive issues, and especially about what you did with the recovery efforts and covering them. So I want to shout out to this station for its work and appeal to the community to support the station.
I'm incredibly touched. I really am. Thank you for that.
Well, you two are slouches now.
Well, no, I mean, yes. Okay, fine.
We gotta go.
Fine. All right. Goodbye.
my thanks to Alan, Libby, and Mike, and Dan. What a pleasure! I hope you'll be back with us soon.
I would love to.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.